So we've just recorded the podcast number 12, I think it was, with Caroline Sumner from R3, and another jam-packed 32 minutes, I think I sort of saw on my watch when we finished recording, of really interesting stuff about the trade body for the insolvency industry.
It was a great conversation, and Caroline, she's articulated herself and represented our members really well from an R3 perspective, and hopefully it gives the listeners a different perspective on a sector that has come in for a lot of criticism.
Yeah, I think there is. I mean, I think you and I saw a quite a different side to the industry, and I think we've been quite objective about it, but we actually saw a different side to the industry when we were at one of their member forums in Yorkshire last month, and I think that's what sort of prompted us to get Caroline on, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, and you know, we said this after the conference we spoke at. I think it's really important that creditors start to engage with these guys and listen to that different view and start to understand what their whole ethos is about. I mean, Caroline talked there about achieving the right outcomes for the customer, and what generally is the right outcome for the customer is the right outcome for the creditor as well. So all stakeholders happy, you know. So yeah, I mean, she's given lots of good examples of where creditors can engage, and they've got lots of events coming up, so we'll help facilitate getting that message out as well, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. Well let's let the listener judge for themselves. Shall we crack on and roll titles?
Let's roll the titles.
The Dead Tech Podcast with Peters and Lee.
No, it's not Peters and Lee, it's Peter and Lee.
Are you sat in a wine cellar by any chance?
My definition of winging it is that you just need to be able to think quickly and know more than the next person in the room.
I've got a face for radio. I'm going to go and brush my hair now.
We haven't got that luxury.
But he did tell me you were brilliant at editing, so
really?
I shouldn't worry about what I say.
I feel under immense pressure now to be funny.
I could see Peter smiling. I think that's the first time.
The Dead Tech Podcast with Peter and Lee.
Hello and welcome to episode 12 of the Trustfolio Dead Tech Podcast, brought to you again by the undynamic duo Peter and Lee. It's been a busy few weeks, Peter, since our last recording. There's lots of things been happening. It all seems to come at once. But one of the highlights for me and yourself was attending the R3 conference in Huddersfield last month, where we were given the opportunity to present the credit review to R3 members in terms of insolvency processes and policy. And in addition to presenting, we also got to meet and speak to some of the R3 members who are mainly insolvency practitioners. So that was great. And it's a really nice segue into introducing our special guest today, who just so happens to be Caroline Sumner, Chief Executive Officer of R3, or Association of Business Recovery Professionals. So welcome to you, Caroline, and thanks again for inviting us to your conference. How's things at the moment?
Well, things are still really busy, thank you, Lee. So since we did the Personal Insolvency Forum up in Huddersfield, we've done our smaller practice group conference last week at the Belfry. So, yeah, lots and lots going on.
Great, okay. And Peter, I should have given you an opportunity to say hello as well. How are you at the moment?
Well, thanks for that, Lee. I don't know about undynamic duo. I think I'm probably totally exhausted because I've been so dynamic through the summer. I wish I had, but no. Yes, good, thanks. All good.
Great, okay. Well, look, let's get straight into the questions then, because we've got lots to ask you, Caroline, and I'm sure our listeners will be really interested to listen to what you have to say. But just first, really, it would be interesting, I think, for our listeners to hear a little bit more about R3, who they are, and what your role is within the organisation.
Thank you, Lee. Yeah, so R3, as you said, is the trade association for the insolvency and restructuring profession. We were set up over 30 years ago, and haven't really changed what we do or the way we do it since then. But nowadays we've got over 3,000 members. And as the trade association, our role really is very much to support the profession. So we do that by providing technical guidance and training. And that's really to make sure that our members are really up to date with changes in legislation and best practice and what's going on around their profession. And we really want to maintain high standards across the profession. So we like to think that we deliver that. We also run a range of events, both nationally and regionally, anything from half-hour breakfast briefings where we talk about one topic and then have bacon sandwiches and mix with everybody else, through to lunches, dinners, all the way through to the conferences that you mentioned. And that really enables our members to really develop strong networks, meet people that they want to work with, identify mentors, peer younger members of in the profession. The insolvency profession itself is quite small. We've got about 1,800 licensed IPs, but it's a really sociable profession, which is great. And then I think one of the biggest roles that we do, and sadly it is needed, is to protect and defend the profession. We respond to stories in the press. We submit consultation responses, giving our members views on proposed changes to legislation. And we do lobby Parliament to make sure that we have a really strong regulation and a legislative framework. I think really that the profession and the work that our members do is widely misunderstood. So there's lots of work for us to be done.
Brilliant. Yeah. I mean, that's a very, very good summary of the organisation. And we've not really, well, I've not really been involved with R3 prior to coming along to your conference last month. You know, I think I told you at the time it was really refreshing, a bit of an eye-opener for myself and Peter. So it was great to come along and talk about the credit review. There's lots discussed, lots of people discuss the insolvency sector. There's lots of views, strong views, and some loud voices, really. And I can understand some of the criticisms, but I also think some of the views are misinformed and maybe directed to a part of the sector that doesn't necessarily represent R3 and its members. I suppose the next question for me is just from your member perspective, how effective do they see the personal insolvency sector, particularly around the IVA processes? How effective do they see that as performing at the moment? And how much of that is, or that performance is influenced by creditors, R3 members themselves, and also those non-R3 members, i.e. the large volume IP firms?
I think it helps really when we're thinking about the effectiveness of the personal insolvency sector to have a look at some other statistics. And they've been quite interesting over the last 5 years when you look at the number of overall insolvencies. And it is a huge number that we're talking about. So in 2022, there were 118,000 personal insolvencies, and that's formal appointments. We're not talking about debt management plans or informal agreements with creditors and stuff. So that's debt resolution, DROs, bankruptcy or IVAs. And there's a lot of talk around mis-selling of IVAs and a real lack of trust in the profession as a result, which for me is really concerning, because every time there's a newspaper headline about the mis-selling of IVAs, that debtors are being misled, that's going to put other people off going through a process or getting advice. And I really worry about that, particularly when you look into the allegations and there's not a lot of truth behind them. So I think one statistic that is really important to hang on to and remember is that around 80% of IVAs complete successfully. So if you think that there were over 87,000 IVAs in 2022, that means over 70,000 people have gone through a process, cleared off their debts, creditors have received something back, and I think that has got to be classed as a success. So from that point of view, I think the personal insolvency sector is effective in doing what it should be doing. But we're also seeing really low bankruptcy numbers. This year to date, we've only had 5,500. Now, you compare that to 2019 when there were over 16,000 bankruptcies. That's a massive difference in numbers, isn't it? And I think we have to really understand what's behind that statistic. Is it that there were better alternatives? DROs have been introduced. Eligibility criteria has gone up. So if you owe £30,000 now and you've got no assets, you can get a debt relief order for £90, whereas bankruptcy is going to cost you hundreds of pounds. So that might explain some of the drop in bankruptcy. And in that regard, DROs do what they say on the tin. They're easy to get into, they're cheap, they wipe your debts out within a year. But I wonder how effective that is for creditors, because we have to remember that behind every individual who owes money is a group of creditors who are owed money. And if we put through so many people through processes where creditors get nothing back, then they're going to really struggle to lend money in the future. So it's a real balance, I think, between interests of the debtor, interests of the creditors. And maybe that's one area where the personal insolvency sector isn't working very well at the moment. So IPs have a duty to balance the interests of debtors and creditors. And I apologise for calling individuals debtors. That's what the insolvency legislation refers to them as. And I know the debt advice sector, it's much more debtor friendly. So we call them consumers. And I apologise if I upset anybody by the use of the term debtor. I don't mean to. But I think we really do have to look at where the market has gone. And I think particularly over the last few years of the pandemic, there's a real focus on putting the consumer first, the debtor first, their needs first. And the debt advice sector, there's a real body of thought that says that debtors shouldn't have to pay anything back. And they're all vulnerable. But I don't think an effective personal insolvency sector can do that. So there are issues. There's issues with access to debt advice. It's really, I find it difficult to understand why insolvency practitioners, who are the only people who are properly regulated and licensed to deal with bankruptcy other than the official receiver, aren't allowed to give advice to individuals on bankruptcy unless they're FCA authorised as well. I don't understand why you can be trusted to administer a process, but you're not allowed to talk about it. I think that's really restricted the access to IPs from individuals. So our members are reporting now that they do a lot less personal insolvency work than they used to 5, 10, 15 years ago. We know there are problems with funding of debt advice, that people can't get into it. And I think with the current cost of living crisis, people really do need help, but they don't know where to go for it. So there are lots of issues around the effectiveness of it, but where you get the right individual into the right option, you can have some really effective outcomes on that. Yeah. And you can improve people's lives, which is one of the things that our members really want to do.
Well, both Peter and I mean, we chatted after the R3 conference, and we came away with that feeling the insolvency practitioners we spoke to, we met with, seemed genuinely interested in achieving the right outcomes. And it was really good to listen to one or two talking about where they are not best placed to advise and support an individual or a debtor, as it's referred to by insolvency service. But I suppose going back to that point, my assumption would be in terms of insolvency practitioners not being allowed to provide advice on a bankruptcy, I was going to say, is it because there's a conflict in them generating a fee and advising? But I suppose IBA is the same, isn't it? And debt management plans advised by debt advisors would fall into that category as well. So why is that then, Caroline?
I think it's a really strange anomaly, and I would love to meet the individuals who agreed the wording for the FCA exemption on IPs having to have FCA authorisation for debt advice, because the words in contemplation of an appointment are in there. So you can give debt advice to an individual if you are contemplating there being an appointment coming out of your advice. So, for example, an IVA, an individual voluntary arrangement, because the IP gets appointed there. Under bankruptcy, the official receiver gets appointed first. So the IP is never in contemplation of being appointed, which is where the restriction comes in. And I do find it bizarre that at the moment there is no qualification for debt advisors. So you can have somebody on a phone who is following a script to give debt advice, and they're authorised and able to give it because of the firm within which they work and the authorisations that they hold. But an IP who is qualified, regulated, licensed cannot give that advice. So it is an anomaly. But I understand that the FCA don't have any interest in revisiting that. And it has put a number of IPs off doing personal insolvency work, and a number of insolvency practitioners going back 10 years would give free advice to individuals and point them in the direction of somebody who actually would take them through the bankruptcy process, or would even take them down to the Citizens Advice Bureau and sit with them whilst they went through the bankruptcy process. So it really has restricted what IPs can do.
And can I just ask you a quick question that's popped into my head there? Is there anything to do with the fact that you've got different regulators that sort of overlap a little bit? Yeah, there's a big debate about should it all be regulated by one regulator, but I'm not sure that's right. But is it just someone didn't get the wording right? Or, as you said, sort of you'd like to have been there when they did that? Or is it sort of, you know, where two regulators collide? I don't know.
I think it's a combination of everything, Peter. I think that the debt advice sector has grown so huge, and there is a lot of money to be had out of personal insolvency. And one of the sad things for me, I think, is when personal debt became a commodity to sell, and that has changed the market hugely. And I think that goes back to changing debt profiles of individuals. So if you go back 15 years, most individuals went bankrupt to business people. And there were very few individuals who had lots of personal debt. And then credit cards were introduced in the 80s, and people's debt profiles changed hugely. And I can remember listening to debt advice calls when I was much younger and thinking, well, how do you get £80,000 worth of credit card debt? Because I couldn't get a credit card without anything more than a £700 allowance on it. So I obviously wasn't playing the game properly. But I think the changing debt profiles have changed the market completely, and the insolvency legislation and the regulators haven't really caught up with that. And what you have now is businesses who see personal debt as a commodity and something to make money from. And I think that has changed the approach that a lot of people take to personal insolvency, and has created a lot of the mistrust, really, because it's also created a disconnect between the actual creditors who lend the money and those bodies that have either bought it and are therefore seeking recoveries, or are now dealing with it en masse rather than at an individual level.
Yeah, that's a good point, really, which sort of leads on to my next question. In terms of the criticism that's being directed to the sector, Trustfolio have developed a platform for creditors to use. It's impartial. It doesn't make any money whether an IB is accepted or rejected. It's purely a vehicle to make it easier for creditors to manage the IVA process and voting on cases, voting responsibly. So one of my frustrations as a creditor who worked in financial services for 25 plus years and probably did criticise the insolvency sector, guilty of this, we didn't always vote on cases. We didn't always use that vote effectively for whatever reason. And fast forward to now, we speak to hundreds of different creditors, and there's still a big percentage of those who don't vote. So that's a frustration of mine, and that's something we're speaking to creditors about, and they sort of accept that and take it on board, and that's how we're making some traction with the platform. But I'm interested from an IP perspective and your members' perspective, what's their biggest frustration with the credit sector? Because they are really influential stakeholders in this process. If they don't vote or accept an IV, it won't happen, yeah?
And I think it's really important to, before we start talking about creditors and IPs, and is to differentiate between the bulk of the IVAs that are done under protocol terms and conditions that the volume IVA providers do. And the whole point of the protocol was set up to make it easier for creditors to engage. So that you get a voluntary arrangement proposal, and it can be 80 pages long. And where do you start reading all that through? And all of that, and they were designed by the Insolvency Act 86 to be individual. So they were all supposed to be different, all supposed to cater for that individual's specific circumstances. And as a creditor, if you've got 100 of those coming through your door every day, how do you cope with that volume of paperwork? So the protocol was designed to make that easier, to standardize the IVA. So as a creditor, there were no surprises. You didn't have to read through each individual proposal. You could be certain that what was on the front page, the summary, was true, and if it was a protocol IVA, you could vote it through. And so they are the bulk of IVAs that are done, but they're done by very few insolvency practitioners. The sort of IVAs that the majority of our threes members do are those individual voluntary arrangements as designed and anticipated by the Insolvency Act 86. So each one is different, each one is very complex. Each one has specific circumstances about why the individual can't do a bankruptcy, why creditors should bear with them for 5 years for a return because of their individual circumstances. So we'll differentiate between the two. And I think some of the problems have come about because our members, my members, our three members, who use our three terms and conditions, haven't really engaged or understood the protocol because they don't deal with it and they don't have to, and therefore they don't explain to creditors properly why it's different, why each one's not standard. And I think one of the big frustrations probably on both sides is this lack of understanding of what the process is and why you're being asked to engage as a creditor. And the legislation is set up to mean that you have to engage as a creditor, because 75% of creditors have to vote in favour for an IVA to be passed. And if you're not voting, then the IP and the individual debtor is really struggling to get something through, which sounds great. I think the other problem that creditors have is quite often the returns quite low. So is it worthwhile you spending an hour or 2 hours reading through the 80 pages when you're only going to get 10p in the pounder back at the end of it? Well, if you're not interested, it's going to take 5 years. So I think there's a lack of understanding. Lack of engagement is really frustrating. And I think that despite the changes that were brought into the insolvency rules a few years ago, which were all aimed at increasing engagement within creditors, hasn't had any positive effect at all. And in some respects, it's made it much harder because the requirements on IPs to report on everything and fees and has just made the agreements that we send out unreadable. So we need to make it easier. We need to make it clearer. So I think the frustrations are really lack of understanding. Even though the IVAs have been around for 30 years, there's still that disconnect and lack of engagement. And we'd love to know, from a creditor's perspective, what can we do to make life easier for you?
Yeah, great. Yeah, and that's pretty much our mantra when we speak to creditors: engage and start to understand these cases more than what we do now. And there is a big group of those starting to listen and do something about it, who we are engaging with. But sorry, were you going to come on and say something else?
I was going to say, but that's why I really like Trustfolio, because at the outset, when I first met Lou years ago, one of the frustrations from the insolvency practitioner world was how do we get in touch with debtors? How do we get in touch with those people that need our services and our advice? And how do we get them to come to us for that advice? And most individual insolvency practitioners haven't got massive marketing budgets. They can't do the big TV campaigns or radio campaigns and everything else. So getting the average man on the street to understand that they're a really good source of advice is really hard. And the debt charities wouldn't refer individuals to them for help. They were happy putting them across to the big providers because they could get lots of statistics back. And when Lou first started, it was to bridge that gap between the individual IP and the people who needed their support. And I know that you've grown hugely since then, and everything has changed with what you do. And I think the creditor stuff is so important, because individual IPs also don't know who to ring to. So who do you speak to within the local authority when you've got an IVA and you need their support, that nobody's named on that? And it's about, and HMRC is the same. How do you talk to somebody in HMRC and explain that this is a really complex situation, but it's all going to work out fine, but we need you to vote in favour of it, when they get thousands of proposals through every day? So it's also about how do we enable the IPs to connect with those creditors that can make the decisions and make the difference?
Well, I think it's brilliant that you're engaging with the local authority sector. And I know you're linked in with the LACEP guys now, and perhaps inviting them to your next roundtable. And that's a great start, I think, Caroline. But just on that engagement front, I suppose, what is next? What's in the calendar for R3? And is there any opportunities there for creditors to get engaged and involved if they were able to?
Yeah, as I said, when I came in, we've just had our conference for our smaller practice in some IPs who are based all around the country. So there was over 250 of them. They all run their own firms. These are all the sorts of people who 5 years ago, 10 years ago, would do a lot of personal insolvency work and do a lot less. We actually had, as a side thing, we had Eddie the Eagle give the keynote address. And I must admit, I don't know how he slipped through the net, because I've spent 3 years going, no, find somebody more current. But actually, I take it all back. And he was fantastic. He had such energy, enthusiasm and passion for life, for skiing, for what he'd done. It was just fantastic to see. And his key message was to, if you have a dream, just go for it. And that came across loud and clear. So it was a really good start to the day. But that was a side story, sorry. So we're planning for next year. And we're in St Andrews, the main theme for our conference next year is all about the future of the profession. So picking up how the profession has changed, how the work has changed, how the underlying creditor base has changed, and how does the profession have to adapt to deal with that better going forwards. We're looking forward to feeding into the government review of the personal insolvency framework next year. I've joined MALG, the Money Advice Liaison Group, and my colleague will be attending the conference tomorrow, so Thursday rather.
Hopefully.
It is Thursday. So I think it's really important for us to join forces and listen and understand what all the other members of MALG are seeing and feeling on the ground. We've done a survey. We're currently doing a survey of our members focusing on personal solvency issues to inform us about what our members are actually doing and seeing that might be very different to what the debt advice charities are seeing on the ground as well, because you get a different cohort of people coming in. And one of the things that I was really surprised to learn over the last few years is how different the people are that go to the different charities. So they all have slightly different debt profiles, experiences and needs. So understanding that is going to be really important. We're going to be meeting with the FCA to understand their concerns and to also assess the impact of the recent ban on referral fees, which was a bit of a sledgehammer to crack a nut, but let's see what happens there. The immediate response has been a huge drop in the number of IVAs going through. But where those people are getting advice from now, I don't know. And we regularly talk to HMRC as well as the creditor. In terms of our own work, we've got the Personal Insolvency Forum in London coming up next February, which is a really great day aimed at anybody in the profession who works in the personal insolvency sphere. We had quite a range of speakers up in Huddersfield, including yourself. We talked about mental health and vulnerability. And some really interesting topics there. We're also going to be doing, we had a day last year called Contentious Insolvency and Creditors Forum. And that is trying to bring together creditors in terms of insolvency appointments where there is a lot of fraud, a lot of investigations, a lot of things that have gone wrong. And we really need creditor engagement in those cases to support the work of the insolvency practitioner, because creditors have a lot of information about individuals that really supports the work that we do. So we're going to be running that next year. And we had a bit of creditor engagement last year, but mainly on the corporate insolvency side. And I'm hoping that this year, with the emphasis on personal insolvency and the framework so much, that actually we will be able to get creditors from the personal insolvency side to engage with us and do a presentation on that as well.
Brilliant. Well, look, there's no excuse, really. It sounds like there's loads happening there and lots of opportunities for creditors to get involved. We'll share far and wide with our network as well, Caroline, and I'm sure those creditors listening will want to get in touch as well. Look, I'm just mindful of the time, and I knew this would happen. We could go on and on and on. It's so interesting listening.
I know, and we haven't touched on anything to do with the issues and everything else that's wrong with the personal insolvency framework at the moment.
We did say, didn't we? We could get you back on in the new year, and I can see that's definitely going to happen. But I have got one more question I want to ask you before we close the podcast, Peter. Just before I ask, is there anything else you wanted to ask Caroline, or have we covered everything pretty much?
There was just one thing that I'd been meaning to ask you for ages. So when I was at the CSA, we were really impressed with the R3 name for the association, or its, you know, subname, or whatever you'd like to call it. And I'd sort of wanted to know what sort of the story was around it. We couldn't think of anything like it at the CSA. We were quite envious, I have to say, because we always looked at our name and you sort of think, like your formal name for the association, ours, the Credit Services Association, sounded a little bit sort of, I don't know, not quite as modern and trendy as some names could be, like R3 is, for example. And we couldn't think of another one. C3 was just going to be ridiculous. But you know, obviously that didn't make any sense anyway. But you know, what was the story around it?
I think a lot of the thought around it was that insolvency is a word that's feared.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the word insolvency practitioner, it puts people off because they assume that, oh, well, they're just going to wind me up or make me bankrupt or whatever. Mm. And if you get to an insolvency practitioner early enough, either as a company or an individual, then the more chances you have of avoiding bankruptcy, IVAs, winding up your business. So the R3 stands for Rescue, Recovery and Renewal, because that is really at the heart of what our profession does. That's what we aim to do. We aim to rescue businesses. We aim to recover people's personal financial situations, and we aim to renew the finance and businesses and get the economy going again. So that's what's behind R3.
And like I say, I sort of knew that, but I wanted you to sort of give you the limelight on it. But, you know, it was so difficult for us to think of something because the debt collection industry really is trying to do just the same sort of thing. Mm. And very difficult to find something as well put as R3 and those three words without pinching them.
Well, I'm happy to share. But I mean, the Debt Collections Agency has transformed itself in the last decade, though, hasn't it? And it's moved away from the hard approach of enforcement letters in big red letters and capitals and stuff like that, to an understanding that actually, if you work with individuals, then you're much more likely to get a positive outcome, aren't you?
Totally.
And I think it's that side of the profession we have a joint interest in, actually taking a much more holistic approach and bigger picture approach.
Yeah.
And if you support individuals, you get a lot more back. And if we as a profession are seen as supporting people and companies in financial distress, we'll get better outcomes. But how you get people to take advice, I don't know.
Yeah, very tough question.
I think
that
will be a challenge that will continue for forevermore, but we'll keep trying. So just last question, Caroline, before you go, we can't let you go without asking. What is the one thing you would like to change about the personal insolvency framework?
That really is a difficult question to narrow down. It was really, I found it quite positive that earlier on this year I was invited to take part in an APPG roundtable discussion on the personal insolvency framework and landscape with debt charities, insolvency service, creditor representatives. And I was really pleased that everybody identified the same issues. So barriers to entry, gaps in debt options, no clear purpose around what the framework was for, what we were trying to achieve by all the different debt options, and also not being able to access debt advice. So I suppose the one thing I would really like to change right now, today, and there are lots of other things, is to actually to get the government to widen the scope of the current personal insolvency framework review, because at the moment it's restricted to just formal appointments, so bankruptcies, DROs, IVAs. And I don't think it's enough to make a big enough change. I want the government to be bold. I want them to review everything from what are we seeking to achieve when we're helping people out of debt? What are we making sure that there are options for everybody? At the moment, if you've got no assets or few assets but no income, there is no option for you, because you can't do a DRO, you haven't got any surplus income to do an IVA, and if you've got no income, how do you save up the bankruptcy petition? So there are so many people who are stuck. So the one thing I would like to change is the government's approach to the current review, so that we can make a once-in-a-lifetime change to make things better for everybody going forward.
Well, there you go, Rishi. When you get back from your AI summit, put that next on your agenda. You've heard it here first. Mm-hmm. We've been told he's a listener, haven't we, Peter? So you never know.
We have. Oh, right, we have. Yes. We did copy him into a couple of LinkedIn posts, but we're still waiting to hear the reply.
It's just disappointing that the current insolvency minister in the past has referred to the insolvency profession as like the Wild West. So that was a little bit disappointing. I can assure him we are regulated, professional and passionate.
Well, hopefully he gets along to one of your conferences and you might see a different side. Well, look, that's been really, really interesting, Caroline. I appreciate your time. I know you're really busy, but honestly, I think our listeners will really value listening to your thoughts and your views on the sector there. So we'll draw close to the podcast and just say again, thank you very much. And we'd be delighted to have you back at some point. So hopefully that happens.
Well, thank you for making it a painless process for my first podcast audience. My Ben, my technical head, who does our podcast, can't believe that I've given my first one to somebody else. So there you go. But outrage. I've told him that I'll invite you two back as Trustfolio, and you can chat to him instead.
We'd be delighted. Definitely, yes. Now that's always different when the shoe's on the other foot. But yes, we'd be up for that, I'm sure.
Excellent, and I won't make you wear a shirt.
Great. Fair enough. Thanks very much, everyone.
Done. Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
So that's podcast number 12 in the bag. Well done for lasting to the very end of the interview with Caroline Sumner, CEO of R3. I imagine you found it just as compelling to listen to as we did when we recorded it. Remember to look out for podcast number 13, which hopefully will be lucky number 13 for our next guest. We'll be announcing who we have lined up in the next few weeks. And as usual, we'll be asking them to talk about their field of specialism and how they see digital resources being better used to help customers in financial difficulty. In the meantime, if you'd like to know a bit more about what we lovingly call debt tech, head over to trustfolio.co.uk on the World Wide Web.